concept of time has puzzled human beings for centuries. We all experience its passing, and yet if we're asked to define it, we struggle. In the 4th century AD, the Christian philosopher St. Augustine went so far as to say, "If no one asks me, I know what time is. But if I wish to explain it to him who asks, I know not." I'm Margaret Harris, Reviews Editor at Physics World, and in this edition of the Books Podcast, we'll be hearing from the eminent cosmologist Lee Smolin, author of a new book on the nature of time. Many physicists have suggested that the reason we, like St. Augustine, struggle to understand time is that time isn't actually real. Instead, they argue that time is a property that emerges from something more fundamental. Just like an object can feel solid, even though it's mostly made up of empty space. Lee Smolin takes the opposite view. He believes that time is real, so real, in fact, that everything is subject to it, even the supposedly timeless laws of physics. Smolin is a researcher at Canada's Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics, and he's published numerous scientific papers about his theories of time. But now, he's also put his ideas into a book intended for the general public. The book is called Time Reborn, and earlier this year, Smolin gave a public lecture about it as part of the Bristol Festival of Ideas. Here's an excerpt.
"Science teaches us that many things we experience are illusions and their deeper ways of thinking about them. We experience the world through time. Is that also an illusion to be replaced by a deeper way of thinking about things and understanding things in which there is no time? Myself, previously, and my colleagues would claim yes. Einstein would claim yes. I am making a case that the answer to that is no. Of all the things that we experience, the fact that we experience everything through a succession of moments is a true reflection of the true structure of nature."
Before the lecture, I sat down with Smolin to learn why he thinks it's so important for time to be real. I began by asking him what is wrong with the idea of timeless laws.
"If laws are true timelessly, if they're just simply true about the universe, then they can't be explained. They can be part of an explanation, they can be referred to as an explanation. But then there's a point where the explanation is incomplete because you have to ask why these laws and not others, why this version of the standard model and not others, why the particular parameters of the standard model and not others. The second important idea of the book is that if we want to not just know what the laws of nature are, but to explain what the laws of nature are, we have to, within science, imagine that the laws are dependent on time and evolve in time."
We don't tend to observe laws changing. If I drop a pencil today, it will fall towards the earth, just like it did yesterday. But Smolin has suggested that laws could appear to be timeless and unchanging, even if they're not. As an analogy, he cites English common law, in which judges are constrained by the rulings of the past, but also free to adapt to new situations. He thinks it's possible that this common law principle applies to the universe, too.
"I'm developing the idea that experiments are repeatable, not because there are laws of nature which are outside of time and which act in each instance in the past, present, and future, but experiments are repeatable simply because nature likes to repeat itself. Well, that then becomes the governing principle, that nature likes to repeat itself. But what it means is that, in the context of quantum physics again, nature, given as input a particular quantum state, subject to a particular measurement, will, according to this hypothesis, look to the past when a similar state was subject to a similar measurement and give you randomly one of the past outcomes as the present outcome. And that's the way in which the probability distribution becomes self-reproducing, self-reinforcing. But if one makes that the law of nature, then one can explain the stability of quantum physics. One can also imagine that if there are novel quantum states, novel entangled states of systems that have never been produced naturally, then there wouldn't be any precedents. And just like a judge would have to, at that point, make up new law, the system nature has to invent a new law of nature right there."
Smolin calls his theory cosmological natural selection. But for me, the image it brings to mind is less about evolution than it is about a confused bunch of photons making up results as they go along. Oh no, this time there are two slits. Right, you go that way, I'll go this way, and we'll form an interference pattern on the other side. It's an amusing picture, and an intriguing idea. However, there are lots of intriguing ideas out there, and most of them are difficult or impossible to test. Smolin acknowledges this.
Because it's one thing to have the general argument that they must evolve if they're to be explained, but it's another thing to offer testable versions of that argument, because it's not science unless you can make a specific hypothesis that can be tested. Well, cosmological natural selection makes two. One of them is that the upper mass limit for stable neutron stars is less than two solar masses. And this is hauled up since 1992 when the prediction was published. So this, to me, it supports the idea that cosmological natural selection might be right, but that's asking a lot. And it's maybe premature, but what it certainly shows is that cosmological natural selection is a scientific theory because it makes a falsifiable prediction. And that's really, really interesting because it's in a realm in which no other methodology has that is explaining the why these laws question or why these parameters of standard model. No other idea about how to do that has led to falsifiable predictions. And you would think, and indeed it took me a long time to get over the idea, that somehow making laws evolve in time was less scientific because somehow the high point, the apex of scientific is supposed to be the method of explanation through timeless laws. And the idea that if you insist on timeless laws, you weaken the explanatory power of science, and by letting laws be the result of evolution in time, and maybe not even deterministic evolution in time, just probabilistic evolution in time, you strengthen the empirical adequacy, as the philosophers call it, or the explanatory reach of laws of nature. And that took me a lot of years to think through, did I really believe that?
The second prediction made by Smolin's theory of cosmological natural selection has to do with inflation in the early universe. He predicts that inflation will not create primordial black holes. And indeed, such black holes are absent in the latest data obtained by the Planck satellite. Still, Smolin says it's too early to tell if his idea is correct. I asked him why, in that case, he decided to write a popular book about it.
I'm a big believer in the tradition that one can address one's colleagues and the public at the same time. The discipline of explaining things clearly to the public, and I feel this very much, makes us improve our thinking, and sharpen our arguments. So even if the book were to be read by a colleague, a fellow physicist, it's a better book and has a clearer argument and is better reasoned and thought through if one is thinking that 95% of the readers are going to be members of the public. So the public benefits because the public gets to, in the words of John Brockman, who's a literary agent in this area, look over the shoulders as we discuss with each other what are the really pressing issues that concern us in this area of science. This is not journalism. This is not reporting set science. This is exploring ideas on the edge of science in a way that the public can be brought along and participate in the discussion. And I think this is an important literature to contribute to.
Smolin's contribution to the literature is called Time Reborn, and it's available in bookstores now. That's all for this podcast, but be sure to join us next time when my colleagues and I will be selecting Physics World's Book of the Year. Until then, thanks for listening, and goodbye.